Welcome back to another episode of the Girls Talk Money podcast. In today's episode, we are talking all about things that will kill your budget in your 20s. This is probably my favorite conversation. And what's funny is that I did a series on TikTok literally 3 years ago called Things That Will Kill Your Budget in Your 20s. And it's actually the very first viral video that I had on social media. You guys loved it back then. So we're bringing the conversation onto the podcast today. But before we get into it, Grace, hello, what's going on in your week?
Hello. It's actually funny that this is the topic that we decided on this week because I'm starting my own version of like the 75 soft. It's going to be more like 53 soft because I'm going on vacation in June. And I just know that realistically, like I'm not going to hold up all of the challenge when I'm on vacation, but I literally printed out a little tracker and I'm going to pick it up at UPS today. But one of the things that I decided to do, I like customized the challenge a little bit. And one of the things is no alcohol. And the reason is because I feel like the cost of dining out has gone up. Like I was doing my budget and tracking my expenses yesterday and I went out to dinner with one of my friends and my share of the bill with my tip was $82. And I was like, yeah, it was actually crazy. Granted, every time we go, this is like our favorite restaurant, we get like an app, our meals and dessert, and then we take a bunch of it home. But like, I also got like probably two or three drinks that day. And I always think, I'm like, would I rather have the $30 to $45 that it costs for those drinks? Or would I rather have the drinks? And I would always rather have the cash. So it's funny because I feel like dining out is like kind of breaking my budget right now. And that's part of the reason why I was like, no, we're going to do like no alcohol until I go to Aruba in June because it's just so expensive. It really is. It adds up. And I'm like, if I didn't get drinks when I go out, I would save so much money, so much money.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like you're never going to go back too, because you've been talking for a while about not really liking the whole drinking thing. And I feel like once you challenge yourself to go kind of 2 months without alcohol, you're going to be like, yeah, it's not bringing me anything. And I was totally fine for those 2 months and I don't really need it back into my life.
Yeah. Well, and when I go to Aruba, we're going to, it's my friend's family's vacation and they invited me to go with them. And one of the things they do on one of the days is go on a booze cruise. And I'm already like, do I really want to be drunk on a boat in the middle of the ocean? Like where this, I'm like, you know, teeter tottering around on this boat, like that. No, like, I'm like, maybe I'll have one drink, but I feel like every time I drink, I just feel bloated. Yes, it tastes good, but like, I just end up feeling bloated. I feel sluggish. Like I don't sleep as well that night. And I just, it is just so expensive. And I'm like, I could do so many better things with my money if I didn't do that, you know?
I've been on one booze cruise before. It was in Croatia when I was studying abroad in college, and I was totally in my like heavy drinking era back then. But even me like could not drink on the boat because I get so motion sickness, or I get sick regardless. And then adding alcohol into the mix just didn't sit well. So I think I had like one drink on the booze cruise.
Yeah, I'm like, no, I would rather sit or lie down on the boat and just like feel the sun and then like hop off the boat and go play mermaids, you know, like I'm just like, it's just what I would rather do at this point. And I don't know, but yeah, I feel like that will help me, to just like, you know, not spend so much as well on alcohol. And one of the parts of the challenge is eat healthy, which is one of the original things in the 75 soft. And that's so subjective. I'm like, how the hell do you like measure whether or not you ate healthy? You know, like you're not going to say you didn't eat healthy that day because you had like one thing that wasn't maybe the most nutrient dense like option. But that also I feel like is going to help, because when I'm going out places and I think about, you know, like what I'm ordering and like, is this nourishing my body? You know, I will choose like more nourishing options. And I'm just excited to see how I feel, you know, at the end of it too.
Yeah. So is it the same? What else is different between 75 soft and 75 hard?
So 75 hard is like, it's you have to stick to a specific diet that you choose. Absolutely no cheat days, cheat meal, no, which I hate the term cheat meal, cheat day.
Yeah, I do too.
But like, no, you cannot go off it at all. 2 45-minute workouts. One has to be outside, which I'm like, some of the days here, it's pouring rain. I'm so sorry. Like, I'm not doing that. A gallon of water, which I was like, no, because I'm literally 5'3". I'm a pretty petite person. I would be peeing my brains out if I drank a gallon of water a day. And then I don't remember what the other two things on the 75 hard are. I think it's, you have to read 10 pages of a nonfiction book specifically every day. 75 soft is just read 10 pages of a book. So I kind of customized the 75 soft for myself. So it's eat healthy, at least 1 hour of movement a day, 80 ounces of water, read 10 pages a day, and then no alcohol. On the original 75 soft, it's only drink socially, but my challenge for myself is no alcohol.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. I like those rules a lot better. The problem that I have with 75 hard is the 2 45-minute workouts per day, because you should not go 75 full days without taking a rest day. How you kind of said, like, just move your body. That's so different mm-hmm. than being like, you need to do a workout every yeah. single day. Like for me, like I can go on a walk outside and that's moving my body, but that doesn't count as a full on workout in the gym. Like you need a rest day.
Right. Which I think is like strange. And I feel like in my opinion is 75 hard is a little bit toxic. And so like, I feel like it doesn't really promote balance. That's why for my personal challenge with my 75 soft for myself is 1 hour of movement. So that's like an hour of yoga. If that's going for a walk outside, if that's like, I am walking around in a city or I go to the beach for a walk or today I walked on my walking pad, you know, like that type of thing. Or it's going to a workout class or whatever, but yeah, the whole like, plus like 2 45-minute workouts. I'm like two separate workouts and one has to be outside. What am I going to go like do burpees on my balcony for 45 minutes? You know what I mean? I just like, I don't know. I think it works for some people, not for me, but yeah. Hopefully I will feel better, feel healthy and strong and also not spend so much money.
Well, I love that. Well, with that, we can jump right into the episode. So like I said in the intro, we are talking all about things that will kill your budget in your 20s. And Grace and I are going to go back and forth and just kind of list off different things that we think, in our opinions, can definitely kill your budget. I can go first with the first item on my list. Okay, so this one I said, running to Target as a hobby. And I think this just like comes down to impulsive spending and impulsive shopping in general, because if you're walking into the store with the expectation that you're going to spend money, but you don't know what you're going to spend the money on, that's impulsive spending to me. I just sort of think like, unless you have a reason to be there, why are you walking into a store? And I think a lot of people find themselves bored on a Saturday or bored on a Sunday. And so they're like, I'm going to go to Target. And then they end up spending $100 on things that they definitely didn't need. I think one big way that I have found to kind of like curb the impulsive spending is literally just not walking into stores in general. You can order anything online at this point or order it online to go pick it up in that Target. So you're not walking around, you're just going straight to the pickup counter and grabbing what you actually needed and going back to your car.
It is so hard when you are shopping in person to not like want to buy everything, especially in a store where you like the stuff in there. It's like at Target. I know the Target near me has like an Ulta in it too. And it is so hard when you're just walking through not to be like, oh my God, that's cute. And that's cute. And oh, I've always wanted to try this and that and whatever. Like, and stores are set up to be that way. Like there's a whole career of people who like their job is to set stores up in such a way that sparks people to purchase or at least like touch the product or look at it and stuff. So yeah, I try not to just like wander around stores either. I just, if I'm like going into a store because I want to buy something, I'm going in for that. But I really try to not wander. Like I'm like, we're going to go in, we're going to get what we need, we're going to go out, because if not, we're going to end up touching a million things and like wanting to buy them. And if it hasn't been on your list to buy, like, do you actually need it?
Yeah, I feel like that's why I never go to malls anymore. One, the mall just like really stresses me out. Every time I step foot into a mall, I just want to leave. I just get so overwhelmed and just annoyed with the whole thing because there's so many people all the time. But I never walk into malls anymore because I always leave with something that I didn't intend on buying. And I'm just like wandering around with the intent to spend money kind of aimlessly. I think getting hobbies is the big thing here, because like, why do I have time on a Sunday or on a Saturday to be like wandering around Target or wandering around the mall? It's because I don't have anything better to do. So if this is like something that you maybe struggle with, maybe consider like, what other activities can I be doing on the weekend that limit my time flexibility to be going to Target and going to the mall?
Yeah, 100%. Kind of in a similar vein, one of the things I had on my list is the whole like keeping up with the Joneses thing and the pressure of feeling like you have to buy things to keep up with like what's going on around you. And I feel like part of this does come back to the impulse spending, but I think part of it also comes back to sometimes like an insecurity where you feel like you have to always be spending to keep up with people around you. And this can be in a lot of different categories. Like when you go out to dinner with your friends and you know that maybe you don't have as much to spend on dinner, but everyone around you is ordering an app and drinks and, you know, all these things. And so you end up buying those things too, because you don't want to feel left out. Or when it comes to like trendy clothing or the Stanleys, like when all the new Stanleys would drop and like you'd see all these influencers with them and people go and buy them. It's like why are you actually buying that? Or, you know, like why? I just feel like a lot of people feel that pressure to keep up. Or it's like when it comes to like apartments, like people, you know, signing leases on apartments that are like a real tight squeeze or don't align with their financial goals. And then, you know, they're spending money that they really don't need to be spending, or that they don't want to be spending simply because they want to keep up and they don't want to feel behind. And I've definitely done this too. I'm not like pointing fingers at people. I've definitely been like, I want to have like the new thing. Then I'm like, why do I want to have the new thing?
One thing that I think is so prevalent for me here on the whole keeping up with the Joneses thing is beauty treatments. I know when I'm sitting around with my friends and we're all just like sitting in a big group having the conversation about so-and-so got lip filler or another person got laser hair removal, and I'm like, I can't contribute to this conversation. It's so easy for me to chime in and be like, oh, well, I also want laser hair removal. Like maybe that's something that I'll like get next, or maybe that's something that I'll spend my money on. But those are the types of things. I know we filmed the Cost of Being a Hot Girl episode, and those are the types of things that can totally blow your budget, because a lot of them are recurring costs. You start getting the lip filler, you start getting Botox, and then every couple of months you have to go back and keep getting those things. So that can be a way to slip into that slope of keeping up with the Joneses as well.
And I think too, especially with social media, that a lot of people see different beauty things. Like they see their favorite influencer just got hair extensions, or they just got some sort of expensive, yeah, like a laser treatment or a microneedling or something like that. And they're like, oh my gosh. And I've definitely like done this too. You're like, oh my gosh, like this is the solution to my problem, right? Like I'm feeling insecure about how my hair looks because I'm looking at all these people around me who all have, oh, this like beautiful, gorgeous, thick hair. And it's like, well, the reason they have this beautiful, gorgeous, thick hair is because they have extensions. So it's like, okay, well, maybe that's the solution to how I'm feeling. And so you try to like find the thing that's going to like, you know, be the solution. It's like, oh, I don't feel motivated to go to the gym. Maybe the like workout set is going to be the answer to this or things like that. And it's like, because you're like, oh, well, I see all my favorite creators and friends going to the gym in these cute workout sets. So maybe that's the answer. And I feel like that also can be a really slippery slope to spending way more than you really want to.
That is so true. There's literally always something to spend your money on. If it's not the workout set today, it's the hair extensions tomorrow, or, you know, it's like whatever you're focused on next week, you're going to be focused on something totally different. I feel like one thing that's really helped me kind of limit the impulse spending and limit the like, oh, I saw so-and-so buy this, so I need to buy it, is I made a list on my phone a while ago called To Be Bought. And I literally just, if I see something that I want to purchase, instead of just purchasing it right in the moment, I put it on this list and kind of sit on it for a little bit. And the list will build up at some point, but it's just good to go back to like a couple weeks later or a month later and be like, why did I put this on the list to begin with? I don't even want this anymore. And that more times than not, that's what it is, because then I'm off of it and I don't care about the item anymore. So most things on my To Be Bought list never end up getting purchased because I don't end up wanting them anymore. I think it just comes back to like removing or putting as much space between the desire to purchase and then actually purchasing the item. Today, yeah, it's so easy to make a purchase like as soon as you see an item that you want to purchase. You know, like my credit card information is ingrained in my brain. I don't know if anyone else, but like I know my credit card number, or it's saved on my computer. So all I have to do is click a button and all of my information pre-populates, or Apple Pay on your phone. It's so easy to purchase now. So putting kind of like as much space between that desire and the actual purchase will definitely help.
Yeah, for sure. I have gotten into this mindset, especially since moving into my own apartment, and like I just have so much more to spend on, right? And my budget is naturally tighter because now I'm paying rent, and I wasn't paying rent at my parents' house. But I am in such a mindset now of like, how can I use up what I have before I go buy something else? Or like, for example, when I'm buying clothes, I'm like, am I buying this because my closet is genuinely missing something? Or, you know, maybe I have some workout clothes that have seen better days. Like they've got pills and like they're getting thin in certain areas and like they're just, you know, they're leggings that don't stay up and I'm trying to like go to Pilates and like I feel like my pants are falling down, you know? Like, so I'm like, okay, in that situation, like, yeah, I can like buy something new. Or like having gotten the color analysis done, now I'm like, okay, this makes sense as to why I don't feel confident in all these clothes that I have. Okay, so I'm gonna sell those and then I'm gonna buy things that I actually like and that can actually create a lot of outfits so that I don't feel like I hate my closet all the time and I don't have that desire to buy clothes all the time. Or even just with like cleaning supplies around my house and makeup, I'm just like, I am going to use what I have before I buy something else. And I always think too, I'm like, what are these things adding to my life? Like, do I need another water bottle? Do I need to buy the new Brewmate? Or is the Brewmate that I have already functioning totally fine? Like, the reason for buying an additional thing, like, what is the actual reason behind that? And is what you have working totally fine? Because I think a lot of the times you'll find that, you know, you're just buying something because, oh, it's cute and I want it or whatever. And it's like, that's fine. Like, if you have the money, like, to do that, like, if you have what I call FU money, where it's like, you can just go spend your money on whatever you want because you're making a crap ton of money. Okay. But for myself and probably the majority of people who are listening to the podcast, not many of us probably have FU money. I certainly don't have FU money, you know? So like, you really just, I don't know, really thinking through like why you're buying something before you go buy it, especially in a culture that is just so focused on like overconsumption and just like, you know, I don't know.
Identifying the gaps in your wardrobe is such an important point and is something that I have never been good at, but I just started a series on my TikTok where I'm taking the outfits that I'm seeing on Pinterest and recreating them with clothes that are already in my closet, because scrolling on Pinterest for outfit inspiration always overwhelms me so bad, because I'll see a girl with a really cute outfit and I'll save 20 pins that look similar to that. And then I'll be like, okay, how do I recreate this? And I feel like I don't have anything in my wardrobe. And then I'm like, okay, I need to go shopping and buy all of these new things. But actually breaking it down, like, okay, here's one pin and I like this outfit. Now let me go into my closet and see what I have that can kind of emulate that. And I did it with, so the video that I posted yesterday, I did it with three outfits and it really helped me see what I have and what I don't have. So now I'm like, okay, if I want to recreate a look that looks like this and I would wear it for this type of occasion, maybe I don't have a chunky sneaker in my wardrobe, or maybe I don't have a tank top that is cropped enough to go with like whatever pants somewhere. You know what I mean? You can kind of like see the gaps and you can see what you already have.
Yeah, I started doing something similar where I pin a lot of outfits that I like because I'm in the process of rebuilding my closet. Literally just to give people an idea of what I mean by like, these are the items in my closet. Sure, I have a couple things that are recent purchases, you know. The tank top that I wore to Pilates yesterday is from Forever 21 and I am like 90% sure I bought it in middle school. I'm 25. Like I seriously think I've had it since like the eighth grade or freshman year of like high school. Like it's actually so old, it's crazy. And I was like, you know what, honey, no, like we can do better, it's time, like we can give ourselves permission to like upgrade. But what I've started doing is I look at all the pins that I'm like of the outfits I like, or when I see content creators that wearing like an outfit I like, I'll save the post and then I'm looking at all of them as a whole and I'm like, what are the common threads? Like they have a very nice pair of jeans that like look really good. Okay, I have like one pair of jeans I like, but they're wide leg, so they only go with certain shoes. So I need to just get like a high quality straight leg pair of jeans. A lot of these things, there's like a lot of these outfits will have like a nice like trouser. I'm like, okay, I don't have a trouser. And then there's like a nice linen pant. I'm like, I don't have a linen pant, or like a nice pair of black jeans. I also don't have black jeans. So I'm like, okay,
well, like nothing. I have nothing.
Right. No, literally. I'm like, it literally makes sense then when I'm going to get dressed and I feel like I have to buy things all the time because I don't even have the actual basics. I don't have like a chunky versatile sneaker that I can pair with different things. So I'm like, once you have the basics, then you don't feel like you have to go out and buy things constantly because what you have is so versatile and you can kind of combine it and swap it. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Love that tip. Well, the next thing on my list, kind of switching gears here a little, I said your friend's big life events. And I feel like this is a conversation we can talk about for so long. This is actually another one of my very first viral videos ever on social media. If someone has been following me for a while, they might have remembered when I went super viral for talking about a bachelorette party that I was invited to. And at the time, I think where this stemmed from was, at this phase of me doing social media, I was doing the Things That Will Kill Your Budget in Your 20s series. And one of the videos that I posted was that your friend's big life events will kill your budget. And I said, for example, I'm in one of my first weddings. I'm fresh out of college, and here are the expenses that I've incurred thus far. And it was like well over $1,000 because we were about to go on this bachelorette vacation to Scottsdale, Arizona. And I posted another video kind of like breaking down what went on with like that vacation. And it went super viral because I was kind of ranting about it, like definitely ranting about it for sure. But by the end of that wedding, I broke down all of the costs and I spent like $3,500 to be in my friend's wedding as a 22-year-old fresh out of college. And at the time, I like really wasn't making money from social media. I was still just in my corporate job with my entry-level salary. I didn't have $3,500 to spend on that wedding. So I think just between like weddings, regardless of if you're in the bridal party, still just being a wedding guest, you have to buy a bunch of things and get them gifts and bridal showers, bachelorette parties, baby showers, a lot of those things can add up, especially if you're in the phase of life where so many friends are having those big life events. All of a sudden, your whole summer is packed with weddings and you need to get gifts and all of the things. Maybe you need to travel to weddings. It really adds up and can definitely break your budget.
This might be a hot take, but I'm saying this as someone who's never planned a wedding or whatever, but I have been in a wedding when I was a child. Like I was like really young. I was like a flower girl, but we had to like buy a dress and like, buy all the stuff, hotel stay overnight, everything. But, and again, this might be a hot take, but I feel like it is so strange when people plan weddings, ask people to be like in the bridal party, and then tell them what is going to happen rather than like asking them. Like they're like, okay, so we're going on this trip, we're going here, like everyone needs to fly in on this day, everyone needs to fly out this day, you have to buy this specific dress with your own money, it's a destination wedding. But I'm just like, I don't know when that started becoming a thing in wedding culture, but it's so weird to me. And I just could not imagine telling my friends like, hey, so you have to go buy this dress that's $350 and you have to have this specific shade of shoe. And it's like, you know what I mean? So now you're going to buy a whole new pair of shoes and you have to do your hair and makeup with the hair and makeup person. Like I just, or like even the bridal, like what do they call it? Bachelorette parties. I feel like those have gotten so out of hand. And I just think it's so, I'm like, how can you? Because like most people don't have $3,500 like lying around that they can just go drop on somebody else, like on things that they don't even have a choice about. It's not like this was your own vacation that you got to spend your money on however you wanted. It like you were kind of spending money. You're being told how you're going to spend the money, which is just strange. I don't
No,
know. It's so weird.
you literally write a blank check. And I definitely think there's a way to establish boundaries kind of upfront when you agree to be in a wedding, which I didn't do. It was my first time being in a wedding that wasn't a family member's wedding. So I kind of didn't know those things. But in the video that I went viral for, just to kind of like set the scene and why I was so frustrated was, and at the time, like for context, my handle on socials was not my first and last name. It was something different. And I had everyone in my personal life blocked because I did not want them finding my TikTok account. So I like really kind of used it as my personal diary, like did not think that people in my personal life were gonna find this video. But it went super, like it was in BuzzFeed, like it was a big, I think I was on Yahoo News, like it was a big thing. But for context, so I agreed to be in this wedding, and at the time I was like, where are we gonna do the bachelorette? And the bride said she was thinking of doing a weekend in Niagara Falls, which is like 3 hours away, because one of the girls was only 19 and you can drink at 19 in Canada. So she was like, we can drive up to Niagara Falls for the weekend and do that. Like there's a bunch of wineries up there. And I was like, that sounds perfect, like such a chill little weekend because I didn't know. I think I only knew two of the girls that were in the bridal party. So it wasn't like I was going on this bachelorette with a ton of my friends. But I was like, that sounds perfect, right? Well, a couple months later, we get a text in the group message saying, hey, we're going to go to Scottsdale, Arizona. And I definitely should have been like, hey, I can't afford to do that. Like, that's totally on me. But again, like, first time being in a wedding, I just really wasn't thinking that I had an option. And we start sending kind of like Airbnbs back and forth. We found an Airbnb. We all agreed on like the price and everything. I booked the Airbnb because I told the bride, I was like, hey, I get like a $200 credit through my credit card if I like book this Airbnb. So I was like, I'll do it. We'll get it a little bit cheaper. So it'll be like a tad bit cheaper for everyone. So I put it on my credit card. Everyone was Venmoing me. Well, one girl backed out. So that made it more expensive for everyone already. And then after that, after we already agreed on the price, we get a message from the maid of honor being like, hey, we're going to pay for the bride's flight and Airbnb. So that made it more expensive for everyone. So I think it, instead of it being a $300 like Airbnb, it turned into close to a $500. So I was already a little bit annoyed about that. And then before the bachelorette, before we were about to go take this entire vacation, we get a message from the maid of honor saying, hey, the bridal shower is going to be like in a month and a half or whatever. We picked the venue. It's going to be $300 a person. And I was like, whoa, like we're about to go on this bachelorette. We never heard anything about us paying for the bridal shower. And now all of a sudden you're asking for another $300. I was like so frustrated. Yeah, it was very interesting.
I don't know why I didn't even like think about the bridal shower, but I never thought that that was the responsibility of the bridal party. If I'm being honest, I don't even know if I want a bridal party at my wedding. I think it's like weird having you have like a bajillion people standing and staring at you. Like, I don't like people staring at me. So I feel like it would make me uncomfortable to have everyone looking at me. And I also like have a very small friend group. So I'm like, all my friends, no one would be in the audience. They would just be like, up with yeah, like it just would be weird. But I feel like wedding culture is just so, I don't know. I just feel like it's become, and maybe it's because of social media, but I feel like over time, it's just become this like huge thing where it's like, it's just like blown out of proportion in a way. Like I'm like, 100%. This is supposed to be like you celebrating the next chapter of your life, not like making your friends go broke. And I do think that there is some responsibility on people who agree to be on a bridal party, but it's like, in the same vein, like you shouldn't have to decline being on someone's bridal party who that could be a friend that you've known for 20 years and you're like, hey, sorry, I actually can't like stand next to you on your big day because I don't have $3,000 to drop on this stuff. Like I can't fathom, like if I had a friend who said that, I can't fathom being like, sorry, I guess you can't participate then.
Yeah. 100%. I totally agree with all of that. I feel like it definitely makes me not want to have a wedding in general because all of that, and I agree, I probably won't have a bridal party because I don't want all of that stress. But the other thing about bachelorettes is I think it's absolutely insane when the brides do like the PowerPoints of all of the outfits that you have to wear, because I used to put PowerPoints together when I was head of recruitment in my sorority. And I was like, telling all of the girls what they have to do for recruitment. And there's brides that are literally, and if anyone's listening to this and has done it, like definitely leave us like a response in Spotify and let us know how this like worked for you. But I've had so many people complain to me being like, I'm going on this bachelorette and I'm getting this PowerPoint of all of these outfits that I have to go buy. The one girl was saying that the one night they were going to go out, it was going to be like Mamma Mia disco theme or something. She was like, why am I buying Halloween costumes for your bachelorette party?
And that's what I mean by, I feel like the purpose of these things with weddings has just gotten so far from the actual intended purpose. Like it's just like, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? Like, what is the reason that you want everyone to be synced up and color coded? Is it because you want to take pictures that look really Instagrammable and you want to post them and you want to get a lot of likes and you want everybody to think like, you know, like what's the actual intention behind it? Because I feel like that is part of it. Like if you're just keeping that photo and you're like, oh, I just want everyone to look cute and coordinated, all right, then tell everyone to wear blue because everyone probably has like at least one blue item in their closet or something. Or you know what I mean, wear neutrals. Like, okay, but when they get so specific about what everyone's wearing, it's like, are you doing this for like the validation, and because you want to look like you're so fun and whatever on social media. Like, what is the actual intention behind it? I did see, I think it's they're Darian and Mackenzie Rencher on social media. I like love their platform. Like, they're both just, I feel like, so sweet. For their wedding, they did a joined bachelor and bachelorette party where they just like got a boat and like bought everyone on the boat. They had all the guys wear black, all the girls wear white. So the girls did have to buy like a white bathing suit if they didn't have one, same with the boys, whatever. But the boys could just wear a black pair of shorts if they really wanted to. And then they all just hung out as one gigantic group and just like partied and had fun. And like, that sounds so much better because it's like, yeah, you just have a little celebration and then everybody goes home. I totally
agree. I think if I had a bridal party, I would only do a bachelorette if I could afford to pay for everyone.
I agree.
Maybe it's like, oh, I go get like a super nice Airbnb somewhere and whoever wants to come just has to book their flight or something. And maybe it's like, oh, you don't even have to be in my bridal party, but just if you're my friend, like, I will invite you, I'll extend the invitation, but no pressure, you know. But like, I would want to like treat them to that for being there for me on my special day. Because yeah, it just gets like a little bit out of hand. And just remembering that your wedding might not be the only wedding that that person has to go to, this, because people have a lot of people in their life that maybe they have six weddings to go to and three of them are destination, and all of a sudden they have no PTO days and they're like completely ruined their budget because of all of these weddings. But with that, before we say anything else on that topic, what is the next on your list?
Okay, this one also, this shouldn't be controversial, but I feel like it might be a little bit, and I don't mean this in a mean way. The whole purpose of this episode is to share things that could break people's budgets. And I say this as like a precautionary thing and something that I am really thinking about, but it's buying a house before you're financially ready for home ownership. Because I think, and I have seen this with people like in my life, so I'm not just saying this as like someone who doesn't own a home and thinks that I know everything, because I absolutely don't, but I have seen so many people save and save and save for like their down payment, and then they get into a house and they're not financially prepared for the extra costs that homeownership has. And I'm not talking about like, okay, I'm gonna wait a couple months to buy like a new couch or whatever. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the unexpected things that happen when you own a home that are just simply not an option to not fix. Someone in my life, for example, bought a condo, moved in. A couple months after moving in, found out that the garage doors that were installed by the previous owners were not up to the HOA standards because these garage doors had windows. And the HOA did not catch the previous owner. And like, they didn't notice when the owner was there and notice when this person moved in. So then the HOA said, you have until this date to replace the garage doors. And garage doors are incredibly expensive. I want to say for two, it was like almost $8,000 this person had to pay. They had the money to pay it, right? However, not everybody does. And that's not like a, oh, like, you know, the doorknob just broke and I have to go to Home Depot and grab a new doorknob and install it. And I pay 20, 30 bucks, whatever. That is thousands of dollars. And then what I see people do is they end up putting things like this on their credit card, which spirals so fast. Like, just because of the interest rate on a credit card, like the actual amount that it costs to fix whatever this thing is that you have to fix, the amount grows so rapidly that it becomes so hard to even keep up with or pay for. And so I say this is like a precautionary thing of like, when you're thinking about buying a home, think about whether or not you have an emergency fund ready to cover some of these unexpected home expenses. And if you're like dead set on buying a house without that, like, all right, you know, go for it. But just know that things will inevitably come up. Literally, it's been raining so much lately, and there's a couple people I know who own homes and their basements have flooded. And I saw a video on social media of this happening to someone, and I don't know if it was a finished basement or what it was, but the water got all over the carpet, and now they have to replace the carpet. And obviously they can like leave it there, right? However, the carpet, if you just leave it wet and just sitting there, I have to believe it's probably going to mold and get disgusting. And then that creates a whole nother problem. So now you have to come pay somebody, or even with, depending on how much it floods, we've had our basement flood a couple times at my parents' house. And luckily my dad had a pump and he was able to pump everything out himself. But had he not had a pump, like if I bought a house right now at 25, like I'm sorry, I probably wouldn't own a pump in my, you know what I mean? Like just realistically. So now it's like, but I can't leave the water sitting there and causing more issues. So now I have to pay for someone to come and pump it out. So I just like, I say that as like a precautionary thing. And something that I'm thinking about in like wanting to purchase a home is that it's not just about the down payment. It really, and it's not just about like your mortgage and what you're paying every month. It's about like, can you afford the things that can happen when you own a home and you're responsible for everything? And that's part of the reason why I still rent right now. Like I'm not ready for the cost of home ownership. You know, I'm not ready. I don't want to drop $10,000 to fix something if it breaks. I want to call my landlord and be like, please come fix it. Thank you. You know, I don't know. And it's very frustrating, I think, for a lot of young people, because a lot of us do want to buy homes and the cost of homes are already so expensive as is. And so it's like, you worked so hard to save that down payment and you're like, finally, but like, can you save for just a couple more months and get your emergency fund in a better place first before doing it? Because I don't know, once you own that house, I mean, you might get into the house, right? And then like, okay, now you're paying your mortgage. Maybe your mortgage is even less than what you're paying for your rent, depending on how much you put down. Like, who knows? Maybe you have some wiggle room in your budget to be putting more aside to your emergency fund after you bought the house. But that's risky too, because you just never know what's going to happen. And you also don't know, sometimes you buy houses and then you find things that the inspector didn't find, or, you know, like it's just, there's risk and there's a lot of financial things that come with it. So yeah, something to think about for sure.
When you rent, that's the maximum that you're going to pay every month is the cost of your rent plus like your utilities or whatever. But when you own, your mortgage is the minimum. That's like the best piece of advice ever, because it's not just the cost to like fix things when it comes up, but also, you know, maybe you went from living in an apartment to buying a 1500 square foot home, like a single family home or whatever. And then you get your first utility bill and you realize that it is so much more expensive to heat and use air conditioning on a single family home that's so much bigger than your apartment. Or I know here in Pittsburgh, the homes here are so old. Like I'll be scrolling through, I scroll on Zillow all the time. It's like a hobby of mine. And the homes will be built in like the 30s or 40s. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, those old homes have so many things that can go wrong with them, or they're just not well insulated. So your utilities are so much more expensive and different things like that. So yeah, definitely a good kind of precaution for anyone that's considering it. Also the down payment, closing costs as well. Yep. So whatever you're closing thinking costs for a down payment, definitely add like thousands of more dollars to that for closing costs. I remember before I moved into this current apartment complex, I literally got pre-approved for a mortgage, and I've definitely talked about this on the podcast before, but I got pre-approved for a mortgage because I was considering buying a condo at the time, because I was like, I have cash for a down payment, I can afford to do it, and I just wanted to weigh my options. And I remember getting pre-approved for a mortgage, and the mortgage lender sent me a piece of paper kind of breaking down like, okay, here's your down payment percentage, what dollar amount that's going to be, and then here's what your closing costs are going to be as well. The closing cost added another $11,000 on top of the down payment amount. And I was like, what am I doing this for? Like, what am I doing forking over $50,000 at this point in my life just to have a mortgage instead of being a renter? So yeah, it's definitely, there's so much to consider when you're thinking of buying a home that you might not be thinking of when you're just looking at the mortgage in general.
Right. And they're not small things most of the time, you know, so they are really big, like budget breakers if you are not prepared for it, which is scary to a degree, right? Because it's like, oh my gosh, anything in my house could just fall apart at any moment, you know, like these things could happen, whatever. But it's just, I don't know, if you can be financially prepared for it, you know. Definitely, definitely try to.
Yeah. Okay, so on another note, the next thing on my list, I said going to the bars every weekend. This is something that I used to totally blow my budget on, like in college and then post college, because I used to go out a lot more than I do now. I feel like I'm such a grandma now and I'm never going out. Or if I do go out, I purposefully drive so that I can't drink, so that I'm spending less money on Ubers and alcohol, and also so that I don't feel like shit the next morning from being hungover. So I do that purposefully. But I feel like I used to go to the bar every weekend, and I live like not right in the city center, like definitely not where we go out. So I would have to Uber there and then Uber back, and then all of my drinks, I would go and spend $150 in a night. And if you're doing that every single weekend, that's $600 a month that you're spending between Ubers, drinks when you're at the bar, or ordering junk food when you get back. Like, it's so easy to get into a bad habit of doing that too. And then all of a sudden you are spending an extra $600 to $800 a month.
Yeah. One of mine that was like on my list that's very similar to this is dining out, because I don't know if it's just me, but the food prices feel like they have gone up so much. Like, I'm like, why am I paying $16 for a drink? Or like, why is this meal like $35 for like a piece of chicken? You know what I mean? Like, if I'm ordering a steak, I'm like, okay. But I feel like it just adds up so fast. And the same thing with like how I was saying at the beginning of the episode, like by getting drinks when you're out to dinner, it adds up. Like, the drink that I really like at the restaurant that I go to all the time is like $12. So I'm like, if I get three of them, that's $36. And if I go out to this restaurant pretty much once a week with my friend, because that's when we like see each other, I'm like, that's like, what is that? That's over $120 a month on just alcohol. And I think about whether I would rather spend that on, I'm like, would I rather get like a new workout set with that? Or would I rather get a massage every month, or get my hair cut? Or, you know, like, there's so many other things I would rather do with that money. And I feel like in the moment, it's easy to just like swipe your card and like not really think about it. And same with drinks, where it's like, yeah, I'll do another round, whatever. And then by the end of the night, you're looking back at your spending the next day and you're like, was that actually worth it? Like, would I value that experience at that much? Like, is it truly worth spending the money on it? And I feel like more often than not, I'm like, no. Like, what was the point? You know, like, why
for
did
sure.
I do that?
You know what? For me, and I know we've talked about this before, for me, I think I value the first drink a lot. And then after that, like, the diminishing value is just so prevalent because... Yeah, like, because if I get the first drink, it tastes so good. The second one never tastes as good as the first. And if I go into like the second drink territory, then I could no longer drive home, and then I'm paying for Ubers. So it's just like, and then I feel terrible the next day because two drinks at this point makes me feel terrible. So I like going out, and instead of going to the bar with a bunch of my friends, like going to a bar that I'm there until 2 o'clock in the morning, I would much rather go to a nice bar and like sit there and have a conversation with my friend drinking an espresso martini, and then probably switching to water after that.
Honestly, I know we talked about this, I think, in a previous episode, and we've had personal conversations about it, because Erin and I went to a work event earlier this year where there's like an open bar, which is pretty standard at some of these types of like work events or conferences or things like that, where at least like there's a bar available, whether you have to pay for it or not. But Erin and I stayed completely sober the whole weekend. Like, we just got mocktails the entire time, and the mocktails that woman, that bartender made, they slapped. Like, they were so good. And I think about it too, and I'm like, I love a nice, you know, crisp, like spicy Diet Coke. You know what I mean? Like, when like the... People who like a good Diet Coke, like, you know what I'm talking about? Like, when you go to like a, like if you go to like a McDonald's or Burger King or like a thing like that, and you get a Diet Coke, like, where it's, you know, it's nice.
It slaps for sure.
It hits like way more than like a can, you know? When I go out to restaurants, I'm like, just give me a Diet Coke, you know? And I'm going to be happy. I'm going to be just as happy. Like, or even when I get like the drink that I get at this restaurant I go to, I like it because it tastes good. I'm not like, oh, I want to feel something. Like, I'm just getting it because of the taste. So I'm like, at that point, just get a mocktail.
Just get a mocktail.
Sometimes mocktails are just as expensive as alcoholic beverages. And I'm like, and I know we've talked about this before, like I'm not paying $10 for a glorified cup of juice. Like
it's
no,
just juice. You know,
it's crazy, you know?
Or my friend was doing dry January and she ordered a mocktail espresso martini. So she paid $16 for like literally coffee, like espresso.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't make sense. I think that restaurants could do a lot better job being more inclusive about having mocktail options that are not super expensive because it's kind of silly, but I also, yeah, I'm just like, just give me a Diet Coke. Like it's honestly fine. And it just truly adds up so much. It adds so much to how much you spend in a month.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we have a couple more here on our list, so let's get to them kind of quickly. This one is a super quick one, but I said not planning ahead can really break your budget. And I have a couple like very random examples of this, but something like paying for rush shipping because you waited until the last minute to buy an outfit. I have done that so many times, or you waited until the last minute. So you bought 5 different outfits when you only needed one because you didn't have time for it to not work out. And then you forget to make returns. Also, forgetting to make returns can definitely break your budget. So be good about making your returns. But then also waiting until the very last minute. So you need to buy something in person as opposed to getting it online when buying it online would have been cheaper. One example that I have for this is, okay, so I'm like pretty flat chested. This podcast is for the girls. I'm pretty flat chested. So more often than not, I'm wearing those like nipple petals. You know what I'm talking about? Like the little like flower things that like stick right on there so you don't have to wear a bra. And you can get like a 30 pack on Amazon for $5. But if I walk into Target, I get one for like $7, mm-hmm. literally one single, well, I guess it's two, but like one pair of like the little stickers that are not reusable for $7. And I have done that so many times in my life because I've had an event and I didn't have any on me. So I'd have to run to Target and buy one singular pair of the nipple stickers for $7.
Oh my gosh. It's kind of funny because I will not pay for rush shipping, like under any circumstance. Like I just, something about it, like I think I've done it maybe once or twice when I like really needed something, like something came up last minute, so I didn't really have an option to plan ahead. I also, with returns, it's so funny because I hear people say this all the time where they're like, I'm so bad at returning things. If I have something I'm not using, I want it out of my apartment literally so fast. Like I can't stand when things are like lingering around. Like
oh my God, you're so much better than me.
It's like I don't know what it is. I just can't. For example, I had a brand recently who asked to send me some like food products, and they're like perishable items I've put in my fridge. And I was like, hey, here are my like allergies. Like, please don't send me anything if I'm allergic to it, because then obviously I can't do anything with it. And I don't want like a bunch of like gluten infested items in my house. And they accidentally sent me a box of literally everything I'm allergic to. And I was like, okay, like there was clearly a miscommunication. It's not, you know, whatever, not faulting the brand, but I'm like, I cannot in like good faith, I just can't throw away like food that could feed somebody, but I couldn't donate it to the food pantry because I'm like, it's perishable. Like they're not going to accept it. It was driving me nuts to have it in my fridge. And I literally posted it on a buy nothing group in my town. And I was like, please, like, does anyone want this? And someone came and picked them up. And because I just couldn't do it. I have some ice cube trays that I bought before I knew my fridge here had like an ice machine thing. And they've been sitting on the side of my apartment because I need to just bring them to Savers. It's driving me nuts. Like I hate that it's on the floor. I literally had to like hide them away because I can't, like, so if I go shopping like and I buy clothes and I need to return something, I'm like, I have to get rid of it. So like financially it kind of works out because then I get my money back, but I can't stand when there's things I don't use that are like sitting there, which I don't know why, maybe because I'm like a little type A, but like, and I don't like when things are like not in order around me, but I don't know. That is for sure something that like, I see so many people posting like, oh, like selling this like new brand new item, just like missed the return policy. I've been seeing this. I've been looking for patio furniture on Facebook Marketplace a lot lately. And I keep seeing people who ordered like $1,000 patio set and they're like, missed the return. I'm like, what? Like, I'm like, oh my God. And like, okay. So then they're like selling it for like $700 or something on Facebook Marketplace. I'm like, okay, you're trying to get your money back. I see you. And obviously returning a whole entire patio set is like a little cumbersome to do, but I'm like, a $1,000 patio, like I'm out here with like my $6 ice cube trays sad that I missed the return policy. Like, I just,
I can't do it. I can't.
I love that.
Okay. The next one on my list, again, I don't mean to, I hope this doesn't come across as like me pointing fingers or anything, but I said new cars and not running the numbers on what your payment will be ahead of time and also not being realistic about what you can afford. I'm not saying that like new cars in terms of like you should always buy used. I don't really frigging care. When I go to buy a car, I will probably buy a new one because I literally hate germs and I feel like you can never get somebody's booty germs off of upholstery. Like I can't do it. Knowing that like they might have tuned in on that seat before. Like,
it's, oh my God.
I can't like, no, like that's literally how my brain thinks
that's
about
so
it.
Funny. I've never heard you say that before.
I can't, that's why I refuse to buy my couch off Facebook Marketplace for my apartment. Everyone was like, get your couch off Facebook Marketplace. I'm like, you have no idea what they did.
The germs.
Like, and I get it. You can buy like cleaners and things, but there's something in the back of my head that's always like, no, like the, yeah. You don't know what they did on it. That's how I feel about like when you go into like, waiting rooms for like the doctor or whatever and they have the upholstered seats. I'm like, I need a plastic seat that you're wiping down with the Clorox wipe because just knowing that there's been so many germs over all of it, bleh, I can't do it. So I'm not saying to buy used cars, right? I'm saying like when people go to buy new cars, I see a lot of people think about the price of the car, but not about what their actual car payment is going to be. And then they get themselves into a car payment that is like $700, $800 a month. And people have probably seen these videos on social media of people who own like big trucks or just like, you know, hybrid vehicles or even just regular vehicles, but they weren't able to put enough down. And now their monthly payment is like $1,000 a month. And I'm not, you know, there are people who obviously get into sticky situations where their car like shits the bed and they're like, oh my God, I wasn't expecting that at all. Or they get into an accident and the, you know, money that they get paid out is not enough to cover like a new car and whatever. Now their car payment is higher. I'm not faulting any of those people. I'm not faulting anybody, but I just think that people should be realistic about what they can afford. Because once you have that car payment, you're kind of locked in a way. Like I see a lot of people who are like, well, you know, my car payment is $700. I owe this much on it, but my car is now only worth this much. So I owe more than the car is even worth. So even if I try to sell it, I'm still going to have like outstanding money on my loan. And now they're like, well, what do I do? Because I can't really lower my car payment unless I try to refinance the loan and get maybe a longer term or a slightly lower interest rate or something like that. But it's not going to move the needle a ton. So it's like really think through. And that's something I'm thinking through with my next car because I know my car, she's gonna go at some point. I really just like am thinking through like what do I really want my car payment to be and being realistic about what I can afford. And it's like I probably can't afford like the hybrid, you know, fancy schmancy vehicle with all the extra add-ins that I want. Like I'm not gonna buy a $50,000 car because that car payment doesn't make sense for me and I don't want it. Like with my other financial goals, it doesn't make sense. I'm probably gonna get a Toyota. I'm gonna pick a practical Toyota and I'm gonna like just get that, you know, I don't need it in some, like, I don't need to be driving some fancy schmancy vehicle. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Go with what you can afford.
And there's like, so run much the
numbers,
here.
Like, yes. And like, go through like Google for like an auto loan calculator. I do this with every form of debt you're going to take on when you're investing, anything that like, you're trying to see how like a loan's going to go down or how an investment's going to go up. Like, literally Google for like an auto loan calculator and plug in the numbers and see what that's going to be in terms of your payment, how much you're paying in interest. Because what a lot of people don't realize too is that if you do buy a really expensive car like that, depending on the interest rate that you're getting, like you can end up spending thousands of dollars more on your car just because of the interest cost. So it's like at the end, when all said and done, you've paid off that vehicle, was it worth the total cost? Not just the amount you put down, but the amount you put down plus all the interest and the payments that you made over time to pay it off. Like, is it all really worth it? And as someone who, I mean, I don't value cars in like I know cars are some people's thing. So like they spend, you know, as where I spend on self-care, like that money that would have been going towards self-care is going towards like their car payment, whatever. If you're a car person, live your best life. I'm not. Like, I drive a 2009 Toyota Camry, and I'm going to drive her until she is literally falling apart, because I'm not a car person. I just need something to get me from point A to point B, and that I can play my music out of, and that is comfortable to sit in.
Yeah.
You know, like, it doesn't make sense for me to buy something that is top of budget.
Right. There is so much to unpack here, because I'm in the same boat. I don't think that car payments are inherently bad. We're not going to sit here and be like, no, you can't pay cash for your car, you better not buy one. Like, that's so unrealistic for so many people. I had a car payment. I had to get a new car out of college, well, not brand new, but like new for me car, because my old one was like kind of shitting the bed, and I was driving for work a lot. So I needed something that wasn't going to break down on me. So I had a car payment, but I got the base model. I got one that was like a lease car. So it had a couple thousand miles on it. So it wasn't brand new, and I didn't pay like the brand new price tag because of that. Yeah. But I got one that was going to be like in my budget. So I was comfortable with the monthly payment. And another thing on that is just making sure that you're not only thinking about the car payment and considering what that car is going to be like in terms of insurance and gas, because, you know, if you splurge on your, I don't even want to call it luxury car, but if you splurge on a super nice car and all of a sudden your insurance is going to be 1.5 times more because of the fact that you got a nicer car, then that's another added monthly expense. Or if you get a car that isn't good on gas, but it's your dream car, but all of a sudden your gas bill just tripled, literally tripled. I remember, I'm always roasting my ex-boyfriend on here, but he like got his, he was like a big car.
He deserves it.
He was like a big car person, and he had a car that literally, I'm not even kidding, had a $900 a month payment. But he was like, I love cars. Like, it's my thing, whatever. However, his car got like 12 miles to the gallon. I'm not even kidding. 12. This man was spending, he was going to the gas station twice a week because he drove a lot for work, twice a week. And it was $100 to fill up his gas tank. I'm like,
my God,
sir, that's another $800 a month that is going to gas. Like,
towards like, and when you think about it, like if you, again, if you are a car person and it is something you value, okay, great, invest in that. But then you have to be willing, I feel, to cut out the things you don't value as much. But when I think about it, and I'm like, and this, I feel like this goes back to kind of like Ramit Sethi's approach, which if you're unfamiliar, he's like a financial dude on the internet. I don't even know how I would encapsulate like what he does, but he also has,
he's the author of like, I Will Teach You to Be Rich.
Yeah. So I don't know how to describe the other stuff he does, but he's also an author, and his book, like I read part of it and then, but it got returned to the library, but, he talks about just like figuring out what your rich life looks like. And when I think about it, I'm like, my rich life at this moment in my life at age 25 does not involve having a beautiful car, right? Like when I think about my rich life in 20 years or even 10 years, yeah, I want to be the mom that like pulls up to my kid's soccer practice in a freaking Porsche. And I look 100%. And I like, you know, and people are like, oh my God, wow. Like, you know, that sure. But like, I have to be realistic about what that looks like now for me. And I also have to be realistic about, are the financial decisions I'm making now going to help me manifest that rich life that I want down the line? If I'm trying to get if I'm getting myself into a massive car payment right now, well, it's probably going to be a lot harder to save for the down payment on a Porsche that I want in 10 years if I have a big, huge car expense right now. Or if I'm, yeah, if I'm spending a bunch on car insurance and gas and all these things because I didn't buy something that is practical. And again, it comes down to like what we value. And clearly it sounds like based on this conversation, neither of us really value having like a luxury car at this moment in time. I just want something to get me from point A to point B. So I don't know. I think it's just important to run the numbers on any big financial decisions like that and really ask yourself if it's worth it. And also know that it doesn't mean like some of these things that we're saying, like break your budget. It doesn't mean that these things are like always going to break your budget, or that if it breaks your budget now, it's like, or how do I say this? If it's like a no now, it doesn't mean that it's a no forever, right? Like, when I think about a car and like getting myself into a really big car payment or whatever, it's a no now, but that doesn't mean that it's a no forever. So I would love, like my dream car would be like a matte black Range Rover. Is that it would that break my budget now? Yes. Yes. You know what I mean? Like
that straight up BS.
It would be it would be stupid. You know, I never call myself stupid, but that would be very stupid if I did that. You know what I mean? Like dumb. But does that mean I can never have a matte black Range Rover? No. It just means that right now it's a budget breaker, but I can work on growing the wealth and the income that I want in order to afford the things that I want to have down the line. So I don't know.
Yeah,
that's my thought on the thing.
Well, with that being said, we've been chatting for so long and I feel like we like still have more on the list, but we are not going to be able to get through them all today. But this conversation was so fun. I love this topic so much. And if you guys loved it too, or if you have any questions for us, definitely leave us questions and or feedback in Spotify. We love feedback. We're trying so hard to make a lot of improvements to the podcast now that we're like really getting into the swing of things. I think we're over 25, maybe closer to 30 episodes now. We need to go back and like number all of our episodes so we can see where we're at. But we're really trying to improve and we're trying to make this podcast super valuable for you guys. So leave us questions, leave us feedback in Spotify. You can also DM us on Instagram over at Girls Talk Money Pod. But thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Girls Talk Money Podcast.